The other day, I signed my kids up for ninjutsu. At 4 and 5, I figured it was high time they learned how to use nunchucks to subdue neighborhood villains and throw sharp-edged stars at stray cats. I'm kidding. They mostly just run around the neighborhood dojo. They do, however, call the sensei Professor Carol, which is her name, and are aware in a way they are not at home that sass will not be tolerated. Eventually, they will learn how to fight, which, as a father, is important to me. I don't want to raise goons. I do want to raise tough kids. I want to raise kids who are so confident in their ability to defend themselves, they don't react with panicky aggression. I want to raise kids who are warriors. I grew up with an aggression problem, with a father with aggression problems. Part of me still freezes when I think of his foaming at the mouth, pounding the steering wheel tantrums. Now, as a father and as an adult, I still struggle with my rushes of rage. Only through martial arts, first Aikido, then boxing and Muay Thai, and now Jiu-Jitsu, have I gotten any sort of handle on it. I learned how to run that aggression through technique, through the fraternity of fighters, through the values of discipline and respect until it comes out the other end without anger. And that's what I want to impart to my sons too. But who am I kidding? I'm not a tough guy. I don't even play one on TV. But I know a guy who does, Frank Grillo. For the last 20 years, a New York born and bred Grillo has embodied a certain scrappy toughness. He's made a career out of playing heavies, detectives, fighters, villains. He is a prototypical guy you do not want to fuck with. You'll recognize him as MMA trainer Alvi Kulina from Kingdom, the not super nice Crossbones in Captain America, Leo Barnes in The Purge, which I never saw because it looks too scary, and most recently as a hero, or rather anti-hero, getaway driver in Netflix's Wheelman. He's also a real, actual fighter who's been training since he was 8 years old in everything from wrestling to BJJ. And for the last 20 years, he's been a father too. Now he has 3 sons ranging in age from 9 to 20 years old, and he lives in Los Angeles with a view of the ocean and a hot tub and all that wide open space. But on a recent trip back to his hometown, we talked about how he's raising his kids to be tough and kind, what fighting taught him about fatherhood, and why it's sometimes okay just to tell your kid, punch the other guy right in the face.
Welcome to the Fathery Podcast. My name is Joshua David Stein. I hope you enjoy the show.
Let's start with Wheelman.
Yeah.
So basically you play a getaway driver.
Yeah.
And you're on the road all night.
Right.
You're on your phone all night.
Yeah.
And one of the people you're talking to is your daughter.
Right.
From a dad standpoint, what I like so much about the movie is, yeah, it's an action thriller, but it's mostly about time management.
Right.
It's just about a dad trying to balance work life.
That's the through line to the movie.
Yeah.
You know, without the dad, the father-daughter relationship, I wouldn't have done the movie. That,
yeah.
To me, that's what it was.
Well, I mean, what's so interesting to me about it is you in the movie, you're a getaway driver. You could have been a mailman. You could have been a writer.
Right.
You could have been an actor.
Right.
Which, coincidentally,
right.
You
I am
are.
Sometimes. Yeah.
But I wanted to talk a little bit and get, you know, your experience on how you balance having kids, because you are a father.
Right.
And being a very, very active, you know, working actor.
Right. Yeah. No, it's and by the way, that's the struggle is you know, when you first start out in acting, all you want to do is work. You want to be in it, you know, and then when you get to a point where you're working a lot, you're like, oh, this is great. But then you have kids and you have a family. And the last thing you want to do is be away from them all the time.
So you started acting
on soap operas 25 years ago.
And your oldest son is 20.
Right.
So you had 5 years of.
Right. And then he. I had him with my first marriage and my first wife. And then, so it was easy to manage time with him. But then I started to travel a lot and I had 2 other kids and it really became problematic. And, you know, I could see them when I wasn't home enough, I could see their behavior changing. And so it's been a big priority for my wife and I, who's also an actress. She works on a show now with Kevin Costner. Sometimes we were away together. Same time, and so my big guy is taking care of them with the babysitter, the nanny, and it's you know, I worry about them all the time. But so when I am with them, it's intense. You know, I've got a lot of life lessons to kind of keep teaching them,
and you have to condense it into
enough so that it sticks,
right?
You know, and it's consistent.
You were saying before that you used to live downtown
right,
around
right Murray Street, yeah, down the street.
And yeah. You moved your whole family out to L.A.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my kids were born and raised in Manhattan.
You were born and raised in Manhattan?
I was born in the Bronx and then moved to Manhattan and then stayed in Manhattan my entire adult life. And probably will come back at some point. But now I live in the Pacific Palisades, which is on the ocean, and there's a pool in my yard and a trampoline, and my kids feel like they're on vacation every day.
Right. So, I mean, I always feel like when you're a city kid and you go to the West Coast, it's how can people have this much space to live?
And the kind of space, like my house literally faces the ocean. So every day we wake up like we're in Anguilla, and it's like, this is the best vacation ever. But it's not. It's where we live. It's gentle. It's outdoors. My kids are outside all the time. And I could see a marked difference in how they are. They're happier. They are.
You are a fairly intense dude.
Yeah.
Grew up fighting.
Yeah. Still do it. Still fight.
Professionally. I mean, not professionally. I mean, not, yeah, I not mean, street fighting.
No, amateur fighting and in all disciplines. Yeah.
Do you think living in the city affected your level of intensity?
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's a different world. It's a different way to live. I'm constantly on the lookout. When I had kids and I lived in New York City, all I was worried about was who I was going to kill if they came near my children. Like, that's how I actually thought walking through the streets, because it's a scary proposition to have babies and, you know, nobody cares. So, yeah, I was always like that.
You started fighting or training when you were 8, I think.
I started wrestling. I started karate when I was like 8 years old. I wrestled through college.
Were you an aggressive kid?
I was aggressive. But I was aggressive in sports. So I played football. And then I got into boxing early on, like when I was 16. I still box every single day. I got into jiu-jitsu after college, and I trained with the Gracie family for 15 years.
Let the record show, Frank is wearing a Thomas.
Tommy Hearns.
The Hitman Hearns, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, yeah. My friends down have a store down in the East Village on Orchard Street called Super Rare. Has every possible shirt you could imagine like this and boxing equipment. So they hooked me up. So I just plugged them.
Yes, you did. let the record show that too. I mean, I think I box as well, and I do BJJ, and
do
I
you?
Do all that stuff. Yeah, not as seriously.
No, that's
as
phenomenal.
You do.
That's great.
Now I think, you know, from my standpoint, I started doing it, and I did martial arts growing up.
Right.
Wrestled, all that stuff. I was really aggressive too, and it was a way for me to handle my aggression.
Absolutely.
Now that I have kids, they're 4 and 5. They're boys.
Right.
We just started Ninja. It's called Baby Ninja.
Right.
So they do ninjutsu and I do jujitsu. We all do it at the same dojo, and it's kind of like a nice family,
of course,
atmosphere. But, you know, raising boys in particular, I struggle with my aggression.
Right.
And my kids struggle with their aggression.
Right.
And to me, being able to give them
discipline.
Discipline.
Discipline the aggression.
Yeah.
I don't think it's aggression. I think this is how men are born.
Yeah.
I think what we try to do is breed it out of ourselves. Through you know, being civilized. And of course, you don't want to walk around being aggressive, but I think it's innate. That's the way we you know. I have another show with Netflix where I travel the world. It's called Fight World. It's like Anthony Bourdain, only I travel the world and I embed myself in whatever the local fight culture is.
The coolest.
And through that, I find out what the culture is through the eyes of... I was just in Brazil last week with Hobson Gracie, who's Carlos Gracie's son. He's 85 years old. This is the guy. Carlos brought jiu-jitsu from Japan to northern Brazil. I was with Jose Aldo. I went and trained with Jose Aldo. Before that, I was in Mexico with Julio Cesar Chavez and Nacho Beristain. I was in Africa, Thailand, Bukhao, the greatest Muay Thai fighter. And the through line that I take from all of these places and people is how, through fighting, they're creating young people, they're creating people who understand discipline, self-control, how to apply what they know if they need to, but how to be great people in society. And I think that's what fighting does for young kids. That's why my kids do the same thing.
So your kids train as well?
Yeah, my kids train. My 20-year-old son's been boxing since he's 11. I mean, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a dad watching that, what are you thinking? You know, are you thinking, man, that kid's tough, or your heart breaks when he gets, you know.
Well, it's funny because, you know, my kids grew up a lot more privileged than I did. So I didn't have parents that were paying much attention to me. They do. So I have to kind of get the aggression to come to the surface a bit so that they can compete a little. I mean, when you play sports, you need a level of, you know, aggressivity.
Yeah.
You really do. And my kids didn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Tommy the Hitman Hearns shirt reminds me. But also just thinking about all of these fighters, from like Floyd Money Mayweather to, you know, to even Conor McGregor.
Right.
A lot of these super talented athletes, they got aggression in them somehow.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, they're great fighters for sure.
Right.
There's also something pretty wounded about them, which is maybe why they turn to fighting.
Absolutely. You know, and again, I've traveled to places that are impoverished. In the middle of Mexico City, I was in Tepito, Mexico, which is drug cartel. But in the middle of Tepito, Mexico is a gym run by a guy named Jorge Vera. And what he does is he brings these kids in and he trains professional fighters as well. De La Hoya trained there for a while. And they are wounded because psychologically they're unstable because there's no money in the house. A lot of times they're not eating three meals a day. And they come from places, and this is why great fighters come from places like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're fighting a lot of things. But at the end, they're the most, all they really want to do is universally be loved.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go away. Yeah. It's really interesting.
I just went to see the Friday night fights, the Muay Thai fights downtown. And to see the fighters embrace after, you know, like a hard-fought battle.
Yeah, especially really... Muay Thai. I was in Thailand again with Bukhao, who is the greatest Muay Thai fighter alive. I trained with him. And, you know, I watched these guys train. And the ceremony of Muay Thai is so beautiful. And then afterwards, they are so brutally vicious with each other. It's nothing but respect.
Yeah.
It's nothing but love. And there's a lesson there.
So you're raising three. I could talk about fighting all day without
kids.
Yeah,
me too. Yeah.
But you're raising three boys. You said nine.
9, 13, and 20.
Are you trying? Does it cross your mind you want to raise them tough? Do you want to raise them gentle? How is your approach to that?
Great question. I want to raise them as men. I want to raise them to be able to walk through the world and not be afraid. Because I think the problem we have a lot of times is people react to things out of fear, right? And I think we've tried to homogenize men a bit, like, you know, emasculate men, make them feel like being aggressive is not good, you know, and there is a time and place for it. So I want them to be comfortable in their physical being so that they can be gentle in their lives.
Right. They can be confident.
Right.
I think I read something that you had kind of said something similar about BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is that those guys are highly trained in a highly effective discipline.
Right.
But that allows them to not be so aggressive walking around.
No. And then when I sat down with Hoker Gracie, who's Hickson's younger brother. I trained with Hickson for many years. And then I sit down with Hobson Gracie, who's 85 years old. You know, it's about spirituality. It's a living a lifestyle of spirituality. Yes, BJJ, I have a shirt that says, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu versus everyone.
Right.
Right? And that was their idea.
Which goes back to that day on the beach where he...
So I was just on Pepe Beach.
You're on the beach.
With Hugo Duarte.
Yeah.
Who fought Hickson Gracie.
Yeah.
I brought him to the beach. This is all on camera. And I grappled with him on the same spot. And then, because that's lute livre. That's a different, that's kind of jiu-jitsu with no gi. And we talked about that special day. The Gracies from the beginning, from when they came from Scotland and Brazil, and they found this jiu-jitsu thing, and they had an idea to market it. So they said, this guy, Hugo Duarte, who's a beautiful guy. I got to be friends with him.
Yeah.
He said, he's a tough guy. He's saying so such and such about jiu-jitsu. So Hickson went down with 50 guys, challenged him, fought him, right? Beat him. 5 days later, Hugo Duarte went to Hoker Gracie's academy and then challenged Hickson. And that's how jiu-jitsu started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically those guys, just to recap, are really trained.
Right.
And they're not scared.
Right.
And I feel what you said resonates so much when I'm raising, my kids are much younger. They're 4 and 5.
Right.
But you can see throughout in my children, in addition to the world in general, when people are reacting out of fear, that's when they get extremely aggressive.
That's right.
And you can see that writ in every aspect of our society.
Absolutely.
So you're raising, but you also don't want to, you want to couple technique and aggression, what you might call aggression without anger.
Right.
With kindness.
Absolutely.
So tell me about how, with your three sons, you cultivate that.
Well, you know, we instill... My wife and I instill in these boys compassion. We make sure that if they see something, you know, they were raised in New York City until very recently. If they see somebody who's homeless, that you don't walk away from them. We would explain to them how a person can become homeless and about their families. And so we teach them to be respectful of everything around them, to understand what's going on around them. Because if you raise a kid in New York City and you don't teach them what New York City is, then you're doing them a grave injustice. If you try to kind of, insulate them from what's going on in the world, then when they see it and you're not around, they have a problem. So we just want to raise really good people. And we make sure when they go a little awry that we bring them back and say, this is why that's wrong. And don't do that again. And this is why you shouldn't do that. And so it's, we're dads. It's a balancing act because they're kids. And, sometimes kids are not nice.
Yeah.
So, we deal with it. Listen, my young one was getting, had a problem with a kid in school. He kept bothering him. I said, my wife said, go tell the principal.
Your son was being bothered.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I'm listening. Go tell the principal. So he came home and said, he won't leave me alone. I said, punch him in his face. So my wife said, what are you doing? I'm like, if they don't want to handle it, I'm going to show you how to handle it. Punch him in his face or tell him you're going to punch him in his face. Guess what? The kid doesn't bother him anymore. So
did your son punch him in the face?
He punched him in the face. So
and he didn't hurt his my big fear.
They're going to hurt their hands. They don't punch hard enough.
I just don't want my kid to break his thumb because he doesn't make a fist or his wrist.
Shoot a double leg. Look, I'm not walking around passive. And if your kid's going to bother my kid, we'll tell the principal a couple times. And if he keeps it up,
I feel the same way. It's a really narrow path that you're trying to negotiate. You don't want to raise kids who resort to violence.
Ever.
You want to raise kids to, for lack of a better word, follow the proper chain of command for resolving things, especially in school.
Right.
But you also want your kid to feel empowered and that he or she has agency to handle something on their own if they have to.
Right. Because you know what? Sometimes adults don't take care of business.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it was good for him. And he's a tiny little cute, like the smallest kid in the school. He's a tiny little cute kid. He doesn't bother anybody. I'm like, why would somebody be picking on this?
Yeah.
Punch him in his face.
In many of your roles, you are, what I might say, not like the coolest, nicest guy.
Right.
And some of them are quite violent.
Right.
Have your kids, do they know that Daddy plays a bad guy?
They've seen the Marvel stuff. My oldest son loves it.
I mean,
he thinks I'm the coolest guy in the world. I'm not quite the bad guy a lot of times. I'm like troubled and got to figure it out, which is... Daddy just wants to be loved universally. So they get a kick out of it. But my little guy, who thinks he's a filmmaker at 9 years old, says, Dad, nobody really cares about you. They care about Captain America. I'm like, okay.
There it is.
All right, so there it is.
Yeah.
Thanks, guy.
We'll be back with more Frank Grillo after a quick word from our sponsor, Verizon. The Fatherly Podcast is brought to you by Hum by Verizon. No one wants to be stranded on the side of the road, especially when you have little ones in the car. But since a road is an unpredictable place, it helps to have Hum by Verizon, the connected car system that assists and empowers drivers. Now you can check your car's health from your phone, and if you have questions, you can connect to a mechanic's hotline for expert, unbiased advice, and even get quotes on repairs. Need help on the road? Hum works with a nationwide network of mechanics and can send a tow truck out to your location. And if Hum detects a crash, it can automatically notify emergency services. It's a smart way to stay on top of your car's health and keep your family safer on the road. Get Hum and get where you're going. Learn more at hum.com.
Your oldest son, Remy?
Remy, yeah.
Is from your first marriage.
Right.
And
Liam.
Named after.
Liam Neeson, my buddy. And Rio, who's named after Rio de Janeiro because I was so... enamored by Rio, my first trip.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Does anyone call him Hio?
Right? They that's exactly right. They don't. And that's funny. I'm going to call him Hio.
Hio, by the way, is...
The R in Portuguese is H in Brazil. He's born in January, so Rio de Janeiro is January River. So it all... And my wife's Portuguese. So
wow.
So they have cool names.
So your 20-year-old was kind of born... When you were younger, as a younger actor.
Yeah. And my wife and I, my ex-wife and I split him 50-50. So I was a single dad with a baby, who I took to restaurants with me and bars and sat him on the, which is maybe why he's so well adjusted.
But those were in your hustling years.
Yeah, I was hustling. Yeah. I always made money as an actor. I was always working. I was always kind of under the radar, but I always made a good living. Even in soap operas, I made a good living. You know, I was young and I had a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because I grew up with nothing. And
where you were born in the Bronx, grew up in the city. What was your childhood like?
My childhood was, you know, I had two parents who had me when they were in teenagers, from immigrant parents themselves.
Italian.
And so very Italian. And
whereabouts in Italy?
Calabria and Naples. I was on my own a lot. You know, yeah. I was figuring it out myself.
What did your parents do?
My dad then never had really a career. It was just like a series of jobs, you know. My mother, too, worked three jobs. I mean, I come from that. I mean, no boo-hoo, but that's what it was. You know, you live month to month. And so that made me a certain type of person.
You weren't going to be an actor. I read that you went to NYU.
Yeah, no.
Stern.
Yeah, I was on a business track, and I kind of knew I was not going to end up that way.
Yeah.
But did it. I grew up with some smart friends, and I was always like a father junkie and looking at my friends' parents, and, you know, they had proper weddings and they went to college, and, you know, my parents were eloped when they were kids and nobody went to college. So I kind of was always looking for somebody to kind of latch onto. And I kind of,
who did you find?
There were just friends of mine who had successful parents and which is kind of how I met Liam Neeson. Oddly, you know, I went to see The Crucible on Broadway with my wife was pregnant, and he came out, and I was always a fan of his. He was just hulking. This was before Taken, before anybody really knew who he was. Gigantic Irish, big nose, beautiful dude. And I was like, let's name the kid Liam. And I was like, what? I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's amazing.
Like that guy.
8 years later, I was sitting at a table with him drinking beers because we were going to go do The Grey together.
Yeah.
And now he's my buddy. And now my son, Remy, and his son, Danny, are great friends.
That's a good
story. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Yeah. So
your path into acting kind of went the commercial route.
Like, yeah.
You were the, if I understand it correctly, like the dude. Like, oh, yeah, that dude. He seems like a good guy. He could sell this.
Right. I was the Coors Light guy for a while. I was selling cars. I was for Procter & Gamble, I was selling deodorant. I was New Shore Clear Dry, a better way to be dry. And I was that guy.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, and by the way, Steven Spielberg saw that commercial and hired me to do a movie.
And I bet he wears that deodorant too.
Well, it doesn't stain your clothes.
Well, you know, it's important for Steven Spielberg not to have armpits on. Yeah, what do you think about you makes people want to buy shit from you?
You know, I think it's the same reason why people watch my TV show or go to a movie that I'm in or like me in movies. I mean, I don't know if they go to see me specifically.
See Captain America.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there's an authenticity. There's a regular guy. There's a struggle internally that I think a lot of everyday people can kind of recognize. I'm not a movie star. I'm not that guy. And I think that's why Liam Neeson did Taken and his career went a different way. It's like,
yeah.
There's something about being authentic and becoming a man before you were an actor.
You know what I think is interesting? It goes back to Tommy Hearns and it goes back to fighters, is there's real built experience that comes with suffering.
Yeah.
Which some people don't capitalize on. And,
right.
Or maybe they do in a private way and then that's their life.
Right.
And then sometimes in your case or in the case of successful fighters, they figure out a way to channel that, which was probably somewhat painful in the way that life is.
Yeah.
And allow it to flower and, you know, blossom in another way.
That's a great way to put it. And you know, listen, the definition of drama is conflict. You need conflict to create drama, right? Great conflict creates great drama. All these things that I'm doing comes from the conflict that I've had in my life, you know, and figuring it all out. And I tell people all the time, I said, there are no rules. I got that from a friend of mine. There are no rules in life. I'm constantly learning. I was in the gym boxing this morning at 6 o'clock.
What gym, by the way?
Mendez. I boxed forever at Mendez. I was just moving around a little and I was looking at this kid. He was maybe 16 years old, beautiful fighter. I was watching him move a little bit and I was like, oh, that's interesting the way he's, I love that. Like, I love, you know, I was in Mexico with Nacho Berestein, one of the greatest boxing trainers, and he was moving me around a bit. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, this could work. So I like to approach even acting. I like to approach everything like that.
I think it's called Zazen, beginner's mind.
That's exactly right. That's, yeah. Zazen is that's we, me and you, man, we can hang out all day.
Before we go into the questionnaire, I think that the real kernel of that is, as we're raising kids, me too, and you're raising kids in circumstances vastly different from how you grew up.
Right.
You have figured out how to turn your upbringing into something that works for you.
Yeah.
Every dad wants to give their kids the best life.
Yeah.
But is any part of you concerned that you're giving them, you're not giving them the raw material of suffering for them later to?
You know, I don't think kids need to suffer. I think kids need stability to be healthy. But I do think kids need to understand what it's like not to have what you have. And that's important. So it's important to pay forward anything that you have that you've been blessed with. And I think my children lay witness to what's necessary when you are successful, how you make it, other people's lives better. And that's by paying things forward. So they're very cognizant of that. And I don't want them to live insecure lives like I was insecure. That I don't know that that's healthy. But they do need to know. I travel around the world now in the most impoverished conditions. Some kids don't have enough to eat. And they know that they understand that. So that when they're eating, if there's something that they've put on their dish, it's as simple as if you put it on your dish, you're not throwing it in the garbage. And I'll even tell you why. A, it costs money. And B, there's some, and it's as old as the hills. There's some kid who doesn't have rice. Like there's some, you don't take
and
this
you've
for
seen
granted.
It.
And I see it all the time.
Yeah.
The sad thing is you want to do so much for so many people. And, you know, you could only do, you know, you could raise the consciousness of people. That's right. Hopefully that will spread. And I mean, there's some great things that come out of those places.
That's a conflict.
Yeah.
We'll be back with the Fatherly Questionnaire after a quick word from our sponsor, TLC. The Fatherly Podcast is brought to you by TLC. When a teenager gets pregnant, it becomes a family affair. TLC's new series, Unexpected, explores the ups and downs of three pregnant teens who are all children of teen mothers themselves. Parents and grandparents must step in and help them through this huge life change. Tensions mount as everyone has conflicting ideas for what is best for the young parents and their baby. Don't miss the revealing new series Unexpected, Sunday, November 12th at 10, 9 Central on TLC and TLC Go. Can't wait until November 12th? You can watch the early premiere starting on Sunday, November 5th with the TLC Go app. Download TLC Go for free from your app store. Every week we ask our guests the same set of questions. We call it the Fatherly Questionnaire. It's about fatherhood. What I like about it is that it cuts to the quick of who they are as fathers and sons. Turns out Us Weekly was right. Stars, they're just like us. Or they're kinda like us. Or look, they're dads and we're dads, so we have that in common. Take a listen.
What is your name?
Frank Grillo.
Occupation?
Actor.
Age?
52.
How old are your children?
9, 13, and 20.
And what are their names?
Remy, Liam, and Rio.
We kind of went over this, but are they named after anyone in particular?
Yes. Rio is named after Rio de Janeiro. Liam is named after Liam Neeson. And Remy is a name I heard when I was a young man. And I said, if I ever have a son, I'm naming him Remy. And he was named Remy.
Where did you come across the name Remy?
I was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I heard the name Remy. And then I heard it again. I think Dennis Quaid played a character in a movie named Remy. I'm like, Remy, I love this name, Remy. And I come from an Italian family. My wife was Italian. You know, they expect you to name them Anthony. And
every kid, Anthony.
Right?
Or Giovanni.
Yeah, and I named him Remy. Yeah, and he's a Remy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how my kids' names are Achilles and Augustus.
Oh, my gosh. Those are great names.
And they've grown into them, you
right,
know?
Right. That's fantastic.
I mean, I don't know if there's ever like a counterfactual like, oh, yeah, that's not like, you know, they become
right.
who they are.
Of course.
But if he lives up to the name Remy, he's a cool dude. Do you have any cute nicknames for your kids?
No, their names are cool. So those are their names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they call you?
Daddy.
even the 20-year-old?
Oh, daddy. Oh, and he kisses me good morning and good night. Oh, it's very affectionate.
That's the dream.
Yeah, yeah. He kisses me. I mean, probably 5 times a day. When he goes just out, he's, you know, bye, daddy, and he kisses me. Just, yeah.
See, that's what I'm most terrified about losing. I record my kids all the time.
That's great.
Just because I'm so...
I know it's cliche, but it does go fast.
Also, you hear their voice all the time. You don't think it's something that you're going to lose, but of course it's going to change.
Yeah,
then they sound like us, real men.
Yeah,
on the radio.
My 13-year-old needs to shave his mother's Portuguese. They have a lot of hair. He's got to shave his mustache. I'm like, what?
Are you teaching him?
I'm going to when I go back, we're going to do it. I'm going to do it with an electric.
Yeah.
13. I didn't shave till I was like 20.
Are you a with the grain or against the grain kind of guy?
I'm a with the grain. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I think against the grain, you get kind of like ingrown.
Yeah, but there's also that whole philosophy that, but it's closer.
Yeah, no, I don't shave. I never, my face is never clean shaved.
How often do you see them?
Not often enough. I try not to ever be away more than 2 weeks.
In a chunk,
which is difficult sometimes. But, when I am home, I'm with them all the time.
Yeah.
So
you were saying that you try to stack life lessons.
Yeah. You have to.
Okay. In the morning, it's kindness. Right. Afternoon's compassion. And nighttime, it's toughness. Let's do it, guys.
Well, you know what I had to start doing is I had to start calling family dinner. Because what happens is, and now where everybody's got different things. And, my kids would eat at this time and I would eat. So I said, you know what? We're all eating at the same time from now on. And it's been, they were resistant at first. It's been fantastic.
Are you a phone at the table guy or no phone at the table?
No phone.
What are the other, this isn't part of the questionnaire, but what are the other rules of the Grillo household?
That everybody needs to contribute to the conversation. Nobody gets to check out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, the 9-year-old will pipe in.
He doesn't shut up. that guy does not shut up.
You're like, okay. You've contributed enough.
The 13-year-old now, geez. The 13-year-old is sometimes he gets a little all over the place. So he's hard to wrangle sometimes. But yeah. They're the most interesting people that I know. So it's fun.
I mean, a 13-year-old. It's such an interesting moment in there because they're growing so much. They're uncomfortable in their own existence
daily. They grow daily, and I see him struggle. He's not understanding it, and he's kind of got the Peter Pan thing. He doesn't want to get older.
Yeah,
I feel for him because getting older stinks.
And there's nothing you can do as a dad. They just got to go through it.
I know. But I'm all over them. I think people, when they see me with them in public, think I'm weird because I'm all over them.
Yeah, but they're great. Yeah, you want to just describe yourself as a father in 3 words.
Attentive, affectionate, and disciplinarian.
How do you discipline?
I hit them as much as I can. No,
with pads.
I sit them down and I'm very stern with them. I can be their best friend most of the time, and it's daddy's a goofball, but they know when I sit them down and I'm in their face and you're not yelling at them, but you look at my eyes. I'm going to tell you something very serious. They know that they've done something.
Yeah.
So that's, that's it. But the rest of the time I'm the fourth kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard transition to make when your relation, and I have the same thing. My relationship with my kids is pretty. I'm not their friend, but it's friendly.
You're pals. Yeah.
But then at a certain point, you do, because it also behooves them to have that.
Absolutely.
Describe your father in 3 words.
Confused, affectionate, and unfulfilled.
Unfulfilled how?
In his life, just never had any guidance, never, again, almost illiterate immigrant parents from a farm town in Calabria. So never really got a shot at anything.
What do you think that if he could have been fulfilled, he would have wanted to do? Is he around?
Yeah. I think, I don't even know that he knows that, but whatever he did do, whenever he went from job to job, He was successful. People love him. He's funny but had a problem with alcohol, struggled all of my life, most of my life, certainly all of my brother and sister's life. So he had that to deal with. You know, we all contended with that for forever.
And he can, and it was a demon that he was wrestling.
Still, yeah.
What are your strengths as a father?
Humor, understanding, and stability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the most, you know, when I'm around, I have a ton of weaknesses and a ton of flaws.
Right.
But I feel like it's better for me to be around with those flaws than to be not around where they don't get any,
I got to tell you, man, kids could live without money. Kids could live without, around, you know, in basically isolated from a lot of other people. They can't live without their parents. They can't live without the stability of family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got a lot of rich friends who grew up in boarding schools and their parents were never around and they're kind of screwed up.
I kind of think it's like you grow up as a kid and you're, who you are as a self is forming.
Right.
And if you don't have someone there saying, I love you, you are worth being loved.
Right.
I love you.
Right.
You are important.
Right.
You develop this armor of defensiveness or whatever, but you can never.
Well, then you go into your relationships as an adult with the similar things, similar things that you've created to protect yourself.
The armor, yeah.
The armor, right? And so it's exhausting trying to get through that. Like, you know, I've had people in my life where it's like, you know, at some point this isn't worth it anymore.
Right.
You know, I don't want to deal with all this.
But you just got to mix that in.
I know.
It's so hard to retroactively peel off the armor.
But, you know, if you open your heart, like if you get to a place where you, and you got to do work on yourself, you know, you got to read and you get these different philosophies that, you know, you open your heart to things and you put your hands down, you realize what comes to you.
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. Just putting your hands down
is a big
when
problem.
When you're used to getting
hit. Yeah.
Putting your hands down.
Metaphorically speaking. I mean, you know, you're waiting for. Yeah.
What are your weaknesses as a father?
Vulgarity.
You've taught your kids.
I got a bad mouth, and I forget that they're around me. Sometimes I would say, undisciplined.
Yeah.
And
you're an undisciplined disciplinarian.
Yeah, and time management.
Oh, like wheel man.
Yes, exactly.
You're
right.
Driving around them.
Right.
Don't do that. Stay at home. Relatedly, what is your biggest regret as a father?
My biggest regret is always that I'm not there enough. I'm not there as much as I'd like to be, you know? And the other side of that is they wouldn't have the life they do, you know? And so I take that, you know? And I am so cognizant of not being there that when I am there, I am there.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a lot of guys that are home all the time, but they don't pay attention to their kids.
Well, I'll tell you, I go to the playground often with my kids around my house. I live in Brooklyn. And the amount of dads who are there, who they're just on their phones, they're looking on their phones and they're pushing the kid with one hand on the swing.
Right, right.
Or they're on their phones and the kid comes like, Dad, look at this. And they look at uh-huh.
Right.
And they go back.
Yeah.
Like, is that being there? Does that count?
It's not. That doesn't count. I mean, you know, like I came home for a short time. I was in Brazil and I came home for a short time. My little guy who doesn't shut up, Rio, he's on the flag football team. He's like, I need cleats, Daddy. I'm like, get in the car. Like, to me, that was a big, when I was a kid, buying cleats was everything. So I said, let's go. We're going to go to the sporting goods store. So we went, and we had this great afternoon talking about cleats and talking about everything, talking about he wanted the gloves because the coach said he was a threat, and so he needed the gloves to catch the ball and the socks, and he wanted the blueberry mouth guard. And it wound up being, because when you have three kids, you usually have them together. And I got to spend some alone time with him.
Yeah.
It was just great.
That one-on-one is so important because when you have three kids, I have two, right? It's like they're different people when they're around each other.
Absolutely.
I spend so much of my time, I guess you call it like mediation,
right.
like with the kids when there's two of them.
Right.
So to be able to see, this is what you're like when you don't have this other stuff going on.
Yeah, it was really great. And I got to be aware and do it more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your favorite activity to do with your kids? Your father and sons thing.
You know, I because it's new, we had this house built. It's being in the pool. you know, these are city kids. We didn't have a pool. Yeah. So, you know, we'd walk outside and I got a beautiful pool. And so we're in the pool together all the time. And
it's not the New York style where it's like, okay, let me see your bathing suits. You can't bring anything but your lock.
We literally, they live on the bottom level of the house and their doors slide open to a great backyard and they're in the pool. And so we spend a lot of time in the pool and then there's a great hot tub. So maybe after dinner, the whole family will jump in the hot
tub. California living.
I know, man. It's genius. It is genius.
I was like, let's walk to the bodega.
That's,
I'll get you Gatorade.
I know, man.
What has been the moment you've been most proud of as a parent?
Is seeing them interact with each other. Is watching my children, the three boys who are together a lot, and my 20-year-old loves to be with his little brothers. Is watching them interact. It's I really step back, and it's because my wife and I have created an environment of love, and these boys adore each other. And to watch them lay on each other like cubs and laugh together and kiss each other, and to me, it's I could cry. I mean, that's to me, that's. You know, I don't follow a religion, but to me, that's God. That's looking at God.
Well, I think what's so interesting is your 20-year-old is really on the cusp of manhood like we
are. Yeah, he is. He's there.
Your 13-year-old is on the cusp of
leaving childhood.
Yeah, and your 9-year-old still has that.
Oh, yeah.
And those are three stages, three totally distinct and magical stages, and to watch them all interact.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like having a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old helps Remy, your 20-year-old, see himself in a different way.
Yeah, because, he knows he's leaving that, and he's a great big brother, but he knows he's about to go into manhood. I mean, he's about to go and be independent at some point.
Yeah.
And so he's aware of time and how it's moved.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating. And I got to tell you, I'm grateful. Because it's all transitory, man. Like, it's not, we're not here forever, you know?
What heirloom did your father give to you, if any?
Nothing.
It can be physical or not physical. And it could be nothing.
I'll tell you, one thing about my father, I shouldn't say that. One thing about my father is, no matter what condition he was in, and it was some tough times, he always got up and went to work. He was disciplined about getting up and whatever job he was doing, laborer or whatever, he went to work. Always. And I think that he instilled that. I mean, I am a hardworking guy, man. Like, I don't know what talent is, especially in acting. It's so subjective, but I work hard. You know, I made Wheel Man. I produced Wheel Man. I was boots on the ground producing it with my partner, Joe Carnahan. I was in a car for 19 days. I knew everything I was doing all the time, not because I'm talented, because I worked hard. Yeah.
What city was that?
Boston.
Ah.
Yeah, Boston.
Oh, yeah. And then there's a lot of talk of Philly.
Yeah, I trained with Peter Welsh out in Southie, who's a famous boxing guy.
What heirloom do you want to leave to your children, if any?
I would like to leave them something physical. I really do. I would love to have something tangible that I have, whether it's something as simple as a boxing glove. Something, I do want to give them something that this was daddy's.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what that is yet because I'm not thinking that far ahead.
You got time.
But they will have something of me on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Describe the dad special for dinner.
Dad special is, again, being from New York City, growing up in New York City, we never had a barbecue. Now I have like a little outdoor kitchen. So the dad special is I get whatever they want to eat. I ask them what they want grilled up. We grill up a bunch of food, and we sit at the table, and everybody's having barbecue, and it's like being on vacation. So that's what's going on.
And then you jump
now.
In the hot tub.
Oh, man, it's just too fun.
This segment brought to you by California. Better than New York. Okay. I get it. Are you religious, and are you raising your children in that tradition?
No. And I think the standard cliche, especially Hollywood answer is, but I am spiritual.
I can attest that yes, that is.
Right. And I don't know what that means. What I am doing is raising kids to be compassionate. And I mean, if you read the first 10 pages of any holy book, they're all the same. And that's probably how you should live your life. I, through martial arts, through jujitsu and martial arts, there's a level of spirituality, of respecting the planet, the world, the trees, the sky. That's kind of like how I'm raising my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I did Aikido, which is like a very specific martial art with a very specific philosophy behind it. But I felt like that definitely informed so much of how I grew up spiritually as well.
Yeah, and that's why I instill that in my kids. But they're not, my kids aren't even baptized. Like, I come from a Catholic family. Yeah. My kids aren't even baptized.
Remy, the unbaptized
They're all unbaptized. Yeah. In fact, we had a friend of ours that was a rabbi, that was a very progressive rabbi. He was a really cool guy. This guy, Eitan, and he blessed the two little ones when they were born. But there's no, my kids aren't, they're not baptized.
Yeah. But they're baptized by fire in the dojo.
There you go.
What is a mistake you made growing up that you want to ensure your children don't repeat?
I didn't respect people around me enough as an angry younger person. So I want to make sure that it's really important to me that my kids are compassionate and respectful of human beings and their condition. And to know that because somebody is in a bad mood, it's not, you don't know, don't ever judge anybody because you don't know what their day or their life is like. And until you know them, don't judge. And so, that's probably something in that ballpark. Yeah.
I think you answered it a little, just over affectionate physicality, but
yeah.
How do you make sure your kids know you love them beyond saying, I love you?
I am physically on them, kissing them, protecting them. And it's funny, when I put them down at night, I say, I love you so much. I love you. I love you so much. I kiss them. You know, sometimes they say, Daddy, enough.
Your beard scratches.
I say, what do you feel? And my sons will say, protected.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, ADT, and we'll be back with a segment we call, Oh Hey Science. The Fatherly Podcast is brought to you by ADT. Home isn't just a place, it's a feeling. The feeling that you're safe to enjoy the things that matter most. ADT lets you take that feeling with you wherever you go. Whether you are at your house, your business, or online, ADT helps keep you safe and secure with security systems, home automation, alarms, and surveillance, so you can feel at home wherever you are. Not sure where to start? Try the new ADT Security Starter Kit for only $49, including professional installation. Learn more at ADT.com. ADT, home, safe home. And now for what they call the small print. Let me bump this up to 12 point. 36-month monitoring contract required. Enrollment in QSP and EasyPay required. Only in select markets. Done. So that's it for security. Now back to my own insecurities with the Fatherly Podcast. My 5-year-old son has the annoying habit of eschewing napkins. He prefers to clean his hands on his shirt. Pizza grease, breadcrumbs, butter, cream cheese, jelly, ketchup, all end up as a Jackson Pollock on his chest. It's a common enough habit for a kid his age, but extremely annoying to watch unfold, especially when I'm the one who does the endless loads of laundry. But even that pales in comparison to the level of sheer rage I feel when he wipes his hands on me, on my clothes, on my shirt, on my pants. The other day we had pizza and it was going fine. We live in Brooklyn where pizza is eaten folded, thereby creating a funnel through which grease flows in great orange cataracts. Some of this grease ended up in the hands of my babe, and shortly after, smeared on the sleeves of my shirt. I lost it. I fucking lost it. Why? I howled from our booth in smiling pizza. Why would you do this? You're being an asshole! The fact is that he was being an asshole, but so was I. He's 5 and I'm 36, and I shouldn't have yelled at him. I know it in my bones it was wrong, and I know in my bones I'll do it again. But in this episode of Oh Hey Science, with our unshaven science editor Josh Krish, we'll talk about what actually happens when I yell at my son. The hope is that science, great beacon of ineluctable knowledge, can serve as a counterweight as I, like many fathers, struggle to contain my rage. Josh, what does yelling do and what doesn't yelling do?
Well, in the short term, it definitely makes them stop. You yell, it freaks out a kid. That absolutely happens. But in the long term, it doesn't seem to have the desired outcome. Parents yell because they want to discipline. Sometimes they yell because they've just lost it. But sometimes there's a calculated yell, where we assume we're teaching when we yell.
That if you say it louder and with anger, it'll hit home harder.
Right, and all of the studies that I've seen suggest that that's not at all the case. The only time that yelling is a good idea, it seems from the research, is when you need to stop a behavior right now because someone's in danger. Your kid's about to run into the street, scream. because you need them to stop running into the street.
But that almost seems like yelling without anger.
Right. Angry yelling, especially just to get out your own emotions, it's not good for you and it's not good for your kid. There was one study that found that harsh verbal discipline, yelling at your kids, cursing at your kids, is about as bad as spanking them or beating them. And a lot of parents are really proud of the fact that they don't hit their kids. That should give us pause, that even if we're not hitting our kids, if we're yelling at them regularly, that's about the same thing when it comes to their long-term outcomes.
Because I struggle with my own rage, it's not that I think...
You gotta just calm down, man.
Thanks. Calm down really helps when you're... Thank you. Thank you for that, Josh.
This is my scientific advice. You gotta chill.
Yeah, doesn't help. I know it's not a good idea that I'm yelling at my kid. Like I said at the top, I think if I understood more on a granular level what happens to my son when I yell at him, it kind of serves as a counterbalance to maybe help me rein in my anger.
I mean, it's a nice thought. We should try, right?
So what does happen to him? What happens to his little body when I'm yelling at him, you know?
One of the first things that happens, especially if you're yelling in a way that scares him, is a fight or flight response. Like anything else that scares him, his entire body is going to go into defense mode to try to escape or to try to fight you off. That's why a lot of times with little kids who are not at all violent toward their parents, you scream in their face, they'll hit you, and they've never hit anybody before. But your body takes over because, oh my God, there's a threat.
It's fight, flight, or freeze, right? Because I see what sometimes happens is he just shuts down.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they'll just stand there like a deer caught in the headlights, which is a classic reaction to fear. So the first thing parents need to realize about their screaming is that frequently the scream is terrifying. It's not so much discipline as much as it is kicking in every part of their body that tells them that they're about to be harmed. So even though you would never harm your kid, your kid's body hears the scream and goes, that's going to kill me.
And that kind of thing, just so I understand, also extends into adulthood. Those patterns of how you learn to deal with stress, fight, flight, freeze, extend to when you're an adult and deal with stressful situations.
Obviously, depending on how often it's repeated. So if our listeners or you have screamed at their kid once or twice or every now and then, but on the whole, that's not how they discipline, your kid's going to be fine. There really isn't a parent who doesn't scream at their kids. There was one study that was just a study of how often parents scream at their kids. I remember the number was 98 or 99% of parents with children under the age of 2 have already screamed at them. And under the age of 2, there's not much to scream about. They can't really respond. So everybody screams at their kids sometimes. When it happens regularly, you're right. It creates a pattern that sets them on the course for negative long-term effects. So maybe those are the two things that you need to keep in mind when you're about to scream at your kid. Number one, they're not going to interpret this as dad is angry. They're going to interpret this, their body at least, is going to interpret this as dad's going to kill me, which is terrifying enough that it should give us pause. And second of all, if you make this a habit, this is going to be how they handle their problems. It's going to be how they talk to other people. And it's ultimately going to cause them a lot of difficulties in their lives.
And you can see that, of course, extending over and over and over again through generations. So when I yell at my son, I'm also yelling at my grandson or my granddaughter, you know, in a way.
Man, that's crazy. But yeah. When you yell at your son, you're yelling at everybody who your son is one day going to yell at, I guess.
You had mentioned earlier how screaming can be as harmful as spanking or physical abuse, beating. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. There's a 2001 study from the American Journal of Psychiatry. They were dealing with children who already had some problems. They were diagnosed with something called depersonalization disorder, which is a little scary in its own right and probably worth a segment at some point. It's where you're not exactly sure where you fit in space and time. You're not exactly sure that you're you. But anyway, these children with depersonalization disorder, they had a small sample of them, and they just wanted to see how they were treated by their parents and by their guardians over the long term and how things turned out for them. They had 49 subjects. 26 of them were totally healthy. The rest of them were not. They had this depersonalization disorder. Across all of the subjects, they found that emotional abuse, verbal abuse and emotional abuse, was a better predictor of long-term mental illness than sexual abuse and physical abuse, which meant that some of the kids in the sample were sexually abused, some of the kids in the sample were physically abused, and some of the kids in the sample were verbally and emotionally abused. And they found that the verbal and emotional abuse was about as bad, and in some cases worse, when it came to predicting later mental illness. That's a crazy finding. I haven't seen it in the literature and larger studies, so it should be taken with a grain of salt. But when you see a finding like that and you lump it in with anecdotal evidence, it definitely builds toward a picture that it might be just as bad to yell at your kid as it is to spank your kid. As you mentioned, though, it really matters what the physical abuse is and what the emotional abuse is, right?
Fundamentally, is yelling verbal abuse? I don't mean yelling like, don't go into the street. I mean yelling like, you're an asshole, which is what I've done. And it's an uncomfortable position for me to be in as a father, as a host of a show, someone who works for Fatherly, to think that some aspects of my parenting are abusive. And I think that's ultimately where I land, uneasy ground to be sure. But am I doing something within the realm of human parenting and human frailty and flawed but loving father? Or am I doing something which is abusive? And it sounds like, as much as I don't like to hear it, that yelling is a form of verbal abuse. And it has all of the effects that verbal, that any sort of abuse has.
You know, the two don't have to be mutually exclusive. It's possible that something that everybody does is abusive. So don't detract one from the other. You know, if yelling that's done in a certain way, especially certain forms of verbal abuse, can be quite abusive. That doesn't mean that everybody doesn't do it. As we mentioned earlier, it looks like from the studies that are available on this, almost all parents yell at their kids, and almost all parents yell at their kids with some regularity. So it's a global problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to let anyone off the hook, and no one, including me. But it also seems like generally maybe that's just what it means to be a human parent is there's a lot of wonderful things you will give your kid and raise your kid and a lot of love and a lot of mentorship and a lot of positive things. To some extent, it's unavoidable that there will also be negative things that you pass on. And some of that's yelling.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that really you can avoid. You're going to lose it sometimes. What you've got to do is make yourself the kind of person who loses it only sometimes. And when they lose it, don't lose it in a way that anybody would call abusive. You don't want to really lose it. So you yell at your kid sometimes. Everybody yells at their kid. That's not the same as sustained long-term verbal and emotional abuse. It's terrifying for your kid, especially if your kid's young. And it's not a good thing, and we shouldn't mince words about it. All of the studies available on the subject suggest that every time you yell at your kid, you're doing something that's not good, that if you do over and over again becomes quite damaging. But we have to figure in the human factor. Part of being a parent also is being sleep-deprived. Part of being a parent also is having way too many responsibilities on your plate at once, a mixture of fear about what's happening in the moment and fear about what might happen in the long term if this child of yours who cannot control themselves gets out into the world and ruins everything. There's a lot bottled up in there, all combined with the challenges of being a parent. You can't blame a parent for screaming. At the same time, a parent should recognize that it's not a good thing, and you got to cut back on it.
Well, that's a lot to think about, and I'm sure I will, and our listeners will. That's a good place to leave it for Oh Hey Science. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Joshua.
You want to hear some music? I want to hear some music. Let's listen to some music. We're in the middle of flu season, which means a few things. Sniffling, coughing, fevers, personal days when you have to stay home with the kids, balancing needing to get out of the house with infecting other kids at the playground. That is to say, juggling selfishness with altruism. Before I got this gig, I was home a lot, and that's the genesis of what you're going to hear now. It's a song I wrote a few years ago called Flu Season. My friend Kyle Forster, a musician, recorded it with Owen Cohen of the band Black Kids on vocals. It's from our album Songs for Kids I've Had. True story, we were going to call it Fucking Kids, but the title didn't work written down. So here it is, Flu Season, from the album Songs for Kids I've Had.
You're the only playground dad that I like. Your name is Mike. My name is Mike, too. I didn't mean to get your kids sick. I agree it was a bit of a dick move. But I just couldn't stay at home alone when all he did was cry and moan. Gotta get up in the morning and head to the park. But flu season is no satisfied in the world. I hear you're fighting with your wife. Well, I do too, Mike. But it's not what I like to do. We're men and we like to flirt with moms as our kids eat dirt. Just because we stay at home doesn't mean we don't have testosterone. Gotta get up in the morning and head
it's Mike. We gotta talk. Grab your stroller. Let's go for a walk. See, I got a new job and it's 9 to 5. I guess it was time to say goodbye. See, I couldn't stay in the home alone, 'cause all I did was cry and moan. I had to get up in the morning and head to work.
And empty playground is the saddest sight in the world.
Snaps. That was beautiful. It helps that I wrote it. The next segment is called The Fatherly Endorsement. You know, a lot of podcasts end with a segment where the host talks about what they're really excited about. For good reason. You want to know about good stuff. Well, here is The Fatherly Endorsement. This week, in honor of Halloween, I want to talk about a book called Book of Bones, 10 Record-Breaking Animals. It's by Gabrielle Balkan with illustrations by Sam Brewster, and it came out earlier this month by Fiden. It's Halloween, and we're inundated with images of scary skeletons. But the fact of the matter is, skeletons are cool. Bones are like the furniture of our bodies. And I know at least my sons are obsessed with them. This book is perfect for them, and for a few reasons. The structure of the book is straightforward. It's broken into 10 chapters. The biggest bone, the smallest bones, the most bones, the longest neck bone. Gabrielle set it up as a question page, which is a spread. It says, guess who has, for instance, the biggest bone? And then on the facing page is a skeleton. Turn the page, and you see the animal in situ and with its skin on, so to speak. For instance, guess who has the biggest bone? I am a blue whale. Now, what's so great about the I am a blue whale page is that you can feel there's texture on the page. Can you hear this, listener? So you can feel the skeleton, and it's a great tactile reminder of the bones inside. The other thing I really like about this book is that it speaks directly to children. I find in so many kids' books, especially nonfiction kids' books, the author either aims too high or too low, and this book gets it right. Listen to the intro. Guess who knows a lot about bones? You do. You know that the soft part of your belly is not a bone, but that the hard part of your rib is. You know that your bones make up your skeleton and that your skeleton gives you your shape. You know that bones come in all shapes and sizes, and that most animals, from the tiny mouse to the enormous Tyrannosaurus rex, have or had bones inside them. So it's speaking right at the kid. The thing that really got me at the end, guess who else has special bones? And the answer is, you do. Like a snake, you have a bendy, flexible spine. Like a shrew, the smallest bones in your body are the hammer, anvil, and stirrup bones in your ears, etc. Basically, what Gabrielle does is she takes all of the animals from the preceding chapters and brings them to bear on the human body, which really drives home the point that we have bones, animals have bones, the universality of bones. So especially at this time, when we're so used to seeing skeletons as something scary, this is a wonderful chance to change the conversation into skeletons and science in general being something interesting and to explore and that's relevant to each and every one of us. The book is smartly organized, expertly written, with beautiful illustrations. In short, it's got good bones.
So that's it for us. Today's show was produced by Kelly Kramer. The theme music is by Kyle Forrester, with vocals by Augie Heerenstein. Special thanks to Josh Krish, Andrew Berman, and the rest of the team at Fatherly. For more Fatherly content, follow us on Facebook at FatherlyHQ. For my random thoughts on life, poor usage of hashtags, and mildly witty dad jokes, follow me on Twitter at FakeJoshStein. Be sure to subscribe to the Fatherly Podcast with iHeartRadio on your favorite podcast app, and stay tuned for updates on upcoming episodes.